Thomas Paine Podcast 26. It's another Wednesday, so here we are again. We did earlier podcast today, Paine in the Morning, with all the news. So we don't have to clutter this one up. I got a great interview here coming. One of my favorites, as a matter of fact, with somebody I really respect. It's hard to focus on these things, though, when you're looking at all the news, the breaking news. It's these people are fighting the law, and they're winning. The law is losing, it looks like. Man. I'm just looking through some of the news. It's some of the images coming from TV in New York and on the over the internet and Twitter. It's crazy. We did a show on More Paine, the More Paine Show last night on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. And the theme was guys like Cuomo in New York and de Blasio in New York. They're doing this on purpose to trash their cities. We don't know why. Maybe there's like insurance money involved. I don't know what these people are doing. Telling police to stand down. The police are getting beat up in the streets. Come on. It's something to watch. It's playing out all over the country. We saw it in Minneapolis as well. These soy latte butter stick mayors, they're like dopes. They're wimps. They're put in place so they can be pushed around by guys like Soros and these puppet masters with billions and billions of dollars that they use it to seed discontent in the streets and in the courts, in the political office in America. It's take a quick drink here. Guys like Soros, why isn't he under arrest? Why isn't he indicted? If you want to do something, clean things up. The DOJ is really interested in cleaning things up. Don't go after the small fish in the street. Go after the people that are paying them. Really go after them. Don't just say you're going to go after them and do nothing. Which is exactly what will probably happen based on history. You know, I really don't want to. I really don't want to get too controversial here in this lead up because I don't want to take away from the guest, Jason Redman, 20-year veteran Navy SEAL. I don't want to take away from his segment and excuse me, what he says and what he stands for and what he's gone through. So I'm just going to keep it cool because, you know, he listens to this and I don't want it to be a, you know, oh, it was good to be on Thomas Paine podcast, but he torched the entire political governments of the United States, local, state, and federal, right before he aired my segment. So it's hard to listen to. He came unhinged. It's a great interview if he didn't come unhinged, that kind of thing. I can come unhinged tomorrow on More Paine. No, on Paine in the Morning. On Thursday, but I think we'll just keep it cool for now because Jason Redman is something else. A guy I look up to, a guy I find inspiration in. It's hard not to. He's like his, he has an infectious spirit. He's doing coaching and motivational speaking, and what he's gone through is just unbelievable. And one of the reasons I wanted to have him on right now is because of the difficulty people are going through with the landscape of CoronaCon. See, there I go again. COVID-19. Folks are under a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. Talking about the depression and battling things like that, and financial difficulties, emotional difficulties, uncertainty, and the list goes on and on and on, and it continues to grow. Yeah, you can add on to that health issues. A lot of people aren't going to the hospital and things like that because they're afraid, and it's been tough to go to the doctor. Bankruptcies, pending bankruptcies, foreclosures, all kind of things. We're going to try to give people a lighthouse out here. Something to look to, some kind of beacon of hope and some alternative message. When you watch the media, I even told our folks on True Pundit, we got to tone down some of these stories, but it's hard to do because that's what's going on the street. So I looked at the page yesterday, that the front page was all like explosions and riots. And I said, isn't there a story of a little kid running an ice cream stand or a lemonade stand where we can get something out front besides this gates of hell news coverage? But it's hard because this is what's going on. It's a reflection of what's happening. We've gone out of our way not to be sensational and cover every little flare up, put videos out that are, it's hard. It's hard to also stay positive. So that's why I wanted to have Jason Redman on. Specifically for that reason. And then I didn't know that when we set this up, there would be, you know, talk of military in the streets and actually military in the streets and things like that. And he has a perspective on that as well. But before we get into that, let me put out a couple public service announcements. Best way to benefit us right now is patreon.com/truepundit. And subscribestar.com/truepundit, where we do the video podcasts of the pain in the morning. We do the video podcasts on there, and as well as other things like the More Pain show we did last night. It's a good show. A couple hours with Crowdsourced Truth talking about everything. We talked about a lot of the police state or the state of police and law enforcement in New York City and other major cities last night, and why cops are being told to stand down by these feckless and corrupt politicians. It's worth checking out. On Monday's Pain in the Morning, I did a half an hour that I probably should have saved for this show. Traditionally, I would have just come out with a flamethrower and start torching everybody. But again, I want this to take on a different, I wanted this to stand on its own without any controversy. They seem to be attracting a lot of controversy lately. And that's what happens when you speak the truth now. People say, oh my God, this guy's unhinged. It's like, no, this is how people used to talk. They used to just tell the truth and not worry about things. But now that's considered that you're unhinged. The heck's happened around here? Okay, so we got those initial plugs out of the way, which is good. I don't know if ads are playing. We supposedly have an ad company. I don't even know if we have an ad company. I don't even know what's going on with these people. So if you hear ads, let me know, because I haven't heard any ads and go through all this trouble setting up ads and there's no ads playing. So if there's ads playing, okay, we make a couple pennies on those and we're in the process of finding another ad company. I mean, it's ridiculous hosting an ad company. When I launched this thing, I was like, you know what? It'll take about a year to get off the ground and then we'll worry about ads and stuff like that. It took 2 months to get off the ground. We caught on fire 2 months in, 3 months in. And so we're dealing with issues that I didn't anticipate this early, which is a good thing. But at the same time, it's like we have to run the gauntlet. It's like trying to buy a used car. You have to find a reputable dealership. Let's just keep it at that. I don't want to take away from the show, but so if you hear ads mixed in here, I let me know, because I haven't heard any, and my people out there listening was, and I've asked for feelers on other platforms and I haven't got any feedback. So I'm glad we went through all this trouble not to have any ads play. And we left another company where we had ads playing. You just can't win with these people. Sometimes I think it's like, you make life tougher for yourself when you just tell the truth and you don't try to sell people a lot of garbage in the media. Jason Redman today talks about the media too, late in the interview. You know, I think I asked Jason maybe a lot of questions other people haven't asked him. So I'm trying to be humble here, but I really like the way the interview came out, and I've watched some of his other media situations, and I just don't think his, the folks who interviewed him were very prepared. Like, I looked at his book. He's got a book, Overcome, Crush Adversity with Leadership Techniques of America's Toughest Warriors. And his former book, Trident, which was a New York Times best-selling book. I took a look at that too. His book just came out and was kind of interrupted by this COVID-19 thing. I think he was getting some good play and then got kind of upended, obviously. But, yeah, so I liked his book, Overcome, and I used parts of that, and I looked at other interviews. So I hope it comes through when I'm talking to him. And also, we've been in some similar parts of the world, and we know some similar folks we talked about off air that we won't talk about on air. So that's between him and I. I think he's one of the toughest guys I know. I can run down a list for you, what he's gone through, but then it'll take away from the interview. We discuss all that on the interview. And I think he's a needed voice right now. And I'm happy to offer to put it together for the folks that listen to us and watch us and read us. And I think it gives a good starting point of people out there who might be thinking about quitting whatever you're doing in life, just being alive. If you're thinking about quitting, giving up, how to stay the course and why it's important to stay the course. How to remain strong during times of crisis and trials. Jason calls it how to survive any life ambush, based on his real life ambush that he's going to tell you about. How do you overcome? How do you get through tough times? If you've never been faced with adversity before and now you're middle-aged or older and now you're facing adversity, it's not a fun thing. Like, people know my story. I went through the crucible years ago, working for the feds and then working against the feds. So I have, in times of crisis now with all the unrest and things, I have this level of calm and almost solace because I know this too will pass. And I've seen the worst, I've been to the bottom. I've been to the abyss, you know what I mean? Rock bottom. So I'm pretty laid back about what's going on, but other folks aren't. So we'll bring Jason on and we'll let him tell a story and it's just an incredible story. Incredible story. And as far as operators go with SEALs and things like that, this is... I don't understand why there hasn't been a movie about this guy. See, all these other movies... I guess Mark Wahlberg hasn't signed on to play Jason Redman. Wahlberg is always playing these guys. It's like... Mark, I think you're too short to begin with to become a SEAL, but anyway, that's just why let facts get in the way of a good story. But I don't know why this hasn't been a movie, you know, and why he's not more mainstream like some of the guys that you see whose stories are mainstream. I mean, I don't get inspired by many people, and his story is inspiring, I have to tell you. So, other than that, we appreciate all the support we're getting on those two platforms. Patreon.com/TruePundit and Subscribestar.com/TruePundit. And people say, well, why do you keep mentioning it? Because that's how we keep the lights on. This is kind of an important piece of what we're doing here. That's why I keep mentioning it. And I'll tell you what, when I first started this, when we first started this, and I think it was like the last week of December, which literally seems like 10 years ago, if you know what I mean. I know you guys know what I mean. About 2 weeks in, I said, I gotta have Redman on. Because I follow him on Facebook. And the one thing that doesn't come through in this interview, because he's obviously talking about very serious issues, is he's a real smart ass and has a great sense of humor. But maybe we'll get to that down the road. And I know a lot of guys like this, and they're fun to hang out with and fun to go drinking with and things like that. So... But this is a serious interview, so we stick to the subject matter. But yeah, he's one of the guys I wanted to have on. Like originally, I was thinking I got to get this guy on, but I got to build this thing up so that I don't want to have him on early because I want him to get something out of it. I want him to be able to maybe move some books or make some inroads with. Coaching, motivational speaking, that kind of thing, make some inroads. So, and we got to that level. We've gotten this thing to a pretty respectable level very early with the help of you guys, by the way, out there. It's more you guys than it is us. That's how I see it. So, mission accomplished for having Jason Redman on, Lieutenant. Navy lieutenant, obviously retired, 20-year veteran, Navy SEAL.
J. Jason Redman. He is a retired Navy SEAL who was wounded while deployed in Iraq.
So in September of 2007, I was literally at the height of my career. Everybody in life at some point is going to walk into an ambush. Some sort of catastrophic event that's going to rock your world and have this impact on your life. The majority of people who walk this earth have never wrestled with an enemy combatant in the deep blackness of night. I quickly realized I was helpless. I was totally pinned down in front of my guys, and there was nothing I could do. I would have given anything to be out of this situation. That day became a benchmark for me. It changed everything in my life. I realized in that moment that I got a second chance at life. Most people, you only get one shot to go through this life and make the most of it. And most people take it for granted. In an ambush, we talk about the point of attack. It's called the X. The reason I survived the one that I was in is because we got off the X. And I said, okay, let's drive forward. We can do this. But everybody out there will go through life ambushes. And these are these hard moments that come along and just knock us off our feet. Because we've all been in that situation where we're like, oh my God, I can't make payroll. How am I going to bring in some revenue right now? We can't make rent. I've felt it.
I realized the mark of a man is not found in his past, but how he overcomes adversity and builds his future.
But the great thing about major life ambushes, they also can define you and make you better, just like that ambush that I went through. If you can create balance in these five key areas of something I call the Pentagon of Peak Performance, I guarantee you, you will be ready for any ambush that comes along. When I was wounded, I had gone through that journey where I had colossally failed as a leader, where I had guys say, kick him out and take his trident. It is the hardest road I've ever walked in my entire lifetime. But it built tremendous mental leadership.
The only thing stopping you from accomplishing greatness in your life is you.
When you are struggling, get off the X and overcome.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on is I didn't anticipate a lot of the stuff that's going on now in the streets and things like that. It just kind of happenstance with the riots and the uprisings and things like that. But I was more interested in, of course, in your story. And your book, Overcome, and your story is overcome as well because of the adversity you've been through. And people are going through a lot of tough times right now. A lot of uncertainty. And so I wanted people to know your story. And we can have you back on to do something later, something, you know, more in depth. But I wanted people to know your story and basically your message to folks who are going through tough times, who may be struggling and finding it hard to cope and things like that, because it is hard when you're going through adversity. And I thought of a lot of people, and I said, you know what? Jason Redman is probably the best guy to have on to tell people, hey, it's going to be okay. You just got to have a positive attitude, and you got to pick yourself up by your bootstraps, that kind of thing. So if you want to tell people what happened to you, we could go back to you were a Navy SEAL for 20 years, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And we could go back to September 2007.
Yep.
In Iraq? Is that you were in the Anbar province?
That's right.
And you got yourself caught in an ambush, and you talk about, since that time, you talk about life ambushes after you survived a real true firefight ambush. And we'll get into that, how to survive any life ambush, which is one of the themes in your books. And in your speaking, public speaking, and your videos, and motivational speaking. But I guess if you could take us back to that time and tell us what happened that night. You were on a mission looking for a high-value Al-Qaeda target. And what happened?
So,
if you want to talk about it, you want to talk about that? Is it cool?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know if we had, I didn't know if we had started yet, or if you were ready for me to talk about it. If you're ready to jump in,
yeah, we're just shooting the shit, man. We're rolling. Okay. Yeah.
So that night it was kind of interesting because we were close to the end of our deployment. We were actually 1 week away, so. You know, you have deployment, you ramp up to deploy, and then you hit it hot and heavy, and it had been a very, very hot and heavy deployment. We saw a lot of combat and had very successful. We had definitely put a dent in the enemy's operational activities in the Anbar province there. And we were about a week from going home. We were starting to pack everything up, and we were waiting for our other team to fly in, and we would start doing what we call turnover operations. So the only thing we really had on the table was just in case. We had a couple of missions that we were going to do as turnover missions, and then we have things called time-sensitive targets. So if a individual we are tracking pops in a specific time and location, that becomes a time-sensitive target, basically. Ramp up and launch on that target very quickly to try and capture, kill that individual before they have a chance to, you know, leave and not be in that space. And that's exactly what happened on that night. We got word that the number one leader for the Al-Qaeda organization in the Anbar province was going to be in a specific time and location. And we ramped up and we launched on that mission, fairly late the timeline. By the time we actually jumped in our helos and flew to that target, it probably was about 2 a.m. at this point. And we, as opposed to many targets, you know, we don't always like to land directly on the target. We call that landing on the X. We did it in this situation just because of the time sensitivity of it. And took the target down, and big letdown. Nobody was there. And basically started searching the compound, and we started finding all kinds of IED making equipment, things like that. But we thought it was going to be a quiet night. We thought we were just going to blow off all the explosives and the IED making equipment, and then we were going to head out of there. And my team that had done the actual target takedown, we were just standing by waiting for the external security team to finish their sweeps and for our explosive ordnance guys to blow all that stuff up. And while we were waiting, my boss came up to me and said, hey, we got a whole bunch of activity on another building about 150 yards away. Our snipers are watching. We watched about five guys run out of the house and run across the street into some vegetation. You know, we've seen this before. Individuals sometimes don't appreciate all our capabilities. And basically, they I don't think they knew, you know, that we were watching them, that our snipers were out there watching them.
Right.
So basically, I took my team and we walked them down. My boss was like, let's go wrap these guys up. You know, it's late at night. It's, you know, 3:30 in the morning at this point. There's a curfew in Iraq. We obviously flew in helicopters. We obviously did some breaching. Good people typically don't come out looking in a war zone. Good people typically don't come out when things like that happen, because they know usually bad things are happening.
Yeah, exactly.
So typically when you see people moving or hiding, they're not good people. And so my boss was like, let's go find out who these guys are and let's question them. So I took my team and we maneuvered on these individuals, and basically what we didn't know is that Al-Qaeda leader had left the house we were in, and he had moved to this other house 150 yards away. And the individuals that came out of the house that our snipers saw were the last part of the security detail. And across the street, they had set up an ambush line. They had, I guess, planned on that we would either drive in or fly our helicopters in and land in the field across the street next to the house to come get him. And we basically walked up from the rear, from behind them, but unfortunately our team got separated in the dense vegetation. We ended up popping out and walking around the front to reconnect. watching these guys the whole time, but not seeing any movement. They were just hiding. But what we didn't know is that the five-man team was actually the last part of the security detail for this Al-Qaeda. And we estimate, to this day, we estimate there were about 12 to 15 enemy fighters, two PKM machine guns, which is a very large belt-fed weapon, shoots bullets about the size of my thumb. And we walked right into this ambush, and they opened up on us. My medic was initially hit, took a round directly below the knee that severed both bones. Dropped him right in front. One of our other guys ran forward and grabbed our medic and started pulling him back. I was out front and I was trying to lay down fire when I got stitched by this machine gun across the body armor. I took two rounds in the left elbow. I was taking rounds off my helmet and the night vision goggle was shot off. I was taking rounds off my gun, yelling at our guys, which I feel like only attracted more gunfire.
Yeah.
But there was no place to go. Behind me, it was literally thousands of yards of empty Iraqi desert. And the only point of cover being something that stops bullets, was kind of a like a John Deere style tractor tire that was kind of laying on the ground about where the road was. And our guys fell back to that tractor tire, and I was out front. And, I've been all shot up and it's like, man, if I don't get cover, I'm going to bleed out. I actually thought my arm had been shot off. I took two rounds in the left elbow and my arm was totally useless at this point. So I thought, man, I gotta get a tourniquet on this arm or I'm going to bleed out and die. So I turned at that point to move back to that tire when I caught a round in the face. It hit me right in front of my ear from behind and traveled through the right side of my face, exited the right side of my nose. So it took off most of my nose. It blew out my right cheekbone, broke what was left of my cheekbone and kicked it out to the right. The bullet traveled right under my eye and vaporized my orbital floor. It broke all the bones above my eye. My eyeball dropped down in this newfound hole in my face. And it knocked me out. So my guys saw me get hit and drop about 10, 15 yards in front of them and initially thought I was dead.
Did you wake up on your back when you came back around? Were you on your back or on your stomach prone?
Yeah, I was laying on my back. I was laying flat on my back when I came to, and I really was trying to, I'll be honest, I think if anybody's ever had their bell rung really good, there's a little bit of what the hell just happened, and sorting through the fog of what occurred. Yeah. Like your brain is trying to catch up, and it's not like if you've ever been knocked out. A lot of people think if you're knocked out, you think, oh, I was knocked out, but it doesn't quite work like that. The stream of consciousness, your brain picks it up from the last moment that you remember. So anyways, long story short, I'm trying to figure out what happened. And then it all started to kind of come back. Okay. You're in a firefight. You're in Iraq. You're super messed up. Oh shit. I got my arm shot off. I got to get a tourniquet on. And I noticed that, laying flat on my back, I noticed tracer fire traveling directly over me.
Yeah. Going over your
literally,
head.
Yeah, the gunfight was actually happening directly over me. My guys were behind the tire shooting. The enemy was, out front of me, shooting back over me. And literally, the bullets were traveling about 8 inches above me. So that was kind of my first coherent thought. Oh, shit, don't sit up.
Right.
So, important safety tip there.
Yeah,
So,
how long did you have to wait for the medevac?
It was about 30 minutes, which is an eternity when you are bleeding out and you're pinned down.
Well, let me ask you real quick. Got that half an hour where your life is fucking changed and you're laying there. What makes you get up? What makes you get back up? You're laying there. I mean, you have a half an hour, probably seemed like 3 hours, but, what goes through your head in a situation like that? What were you thinking about? And is there anything that sticks out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I remember very distinctly. So the first thing that went through my head was more tactical. I was kind of thinking about, you know, okay, where are our guys?
Right.
Where are our assets? You know, we need to call in. You know, I started doing what I'd been trained to do, but I quickly realized that was out of the fight. I mean, I was combat ineffective. I mean, you know. So then I started thinking about, I was kind of angry, to be perfectly honest, that we got ourselves into that situation.
Yeah.
I was kind of pissed off. And then I started thinking, I started to get weak, I'll be honest. I was losing a lot of blood.
Right.
I knew I didn't have a tourniquet on. I started going through all the signs of shock and bleeding out. So I started thinking about the fact that I was going to die and that this may be it for me. And that kind of made me angry also. And I was like, man, I don't want the enemy to have the satisfaction of knowing they killed me. And then that kind of led me to the thoughts of my wife and kids. I had three small kids, amazing wife. And I'll be honest, that was a little more of a reality moment. Like, hey, you're not going to go home and see them anymore. So there's not going to be any more Christmases, no more Halloween. And that was a tough moment. And then it also was the moment I think I needed to kind of shake me awake and say, man, I got to go home. And it was a moment that I called out to God and said, hey, I need some help here. I need the strength to go home. Because I literally felt like I was reaching a point where I couldn't move a muscle. It was getting harder and harder to breathe. And, you know, I don't know what people's faith backgrounds are or whatever you want to believe. But when I did that, I suddenly I felt energy and strength. And I felt like I could breathe. And I just focused on the one thing that this thought popped into my head that if you could make it to the combat support hospital, the military, the combat emergency room with a pulse, you've got a 90% chance of making it home alive. And that's what I focused on. I was like, I don't care what happens, dude, you have got to show up alive.
Yeah,
man. And stay awake to stay alive. Because everything in me wanted to go to sleep. It was just like, man, just let go. You know, you're so tired.
Yeah, your body's shutting down, man. You're shutting down.
Yeah, and I knew that if I did, I'd never wake up again. So that's what I focused
on. Clear night that night? Could you look up and see the stars and be like, yo, this is...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing all the stars.
You can see a lot more stars over there than you can see over here half the time.
Oh, absolutely, because we don't have the power infrastructure.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the Middle East, especially out in the rural parts of Afghanistan, Iraq. They don't have the power that we have. You know, they just, you know, most of them don't have power at all. And so, yeah, beautiful, clear night, star-filled sky. And, I mean, I remember landing there looking at the stars. There also was a tree in my line of sight, and I remember that very vividly. Like, you know, I'm looking at the stars, and there's this one tree. But that's what I focused on. And my teammates did an amazing job. I mean, shout out to the Air Force. We had an AC-130 gunship up overhead, which for anybody that doesn't know what that is, it's an amazing piece of American technological might. They basically took an incredible aircraft, and then they put some of the most incredible targeting technology on that aircraft and some really big guns, a 105 millimeter howitzer, a 40 millimeter cannon, smaller cannon, and then a 25 millimeter chain gun, which is a mini gun, shoots about 6,000 rounds per minute. And that aircraft was up overhead, which I've used that aircraft extensively. It's a big aircraft for special operations, and you know, oftentimes our infantry troops when they get in trouble. And that night, thank God, we had one overhead. We ended up calling fire directly on our position, and my team leader was the one that did that. And he did an amazing job of coordinating that fire mission, the closest fire mission in the entire Iraq war. I literally remember him yelling out to me, incoming, and hearing the crump of the cannons from that aircraft. And then, you know, there's a delay of, I don't know, 5 seconds or so before the rounds hit the ground.
Yeah.
And I remember the rounds hitting the ground in front of me and exploding. And you got to think, there was a whole bunch of gunfire. This was a very well-trained enemy force, very highly trained instructors know how to maintain continuity of firepower, meaning we have a term in the military, or at least in the SEAL teams, we used to call it making your guns sing. So basically, there's never a lull in fire. So, you know, if guys on the right are shooting, guys on the left are not. That way, there's this constant flow of gunfire. And I remember just listening. These guys were really good. They were laying down very effective fire. And then this fire came in, and suddenly, for a few moments, it went quiet. And I remember listening as these explosions occurred, you know, and I felt the dirt and debris and the heat blow off over me. You know, I could hear the enemy machine gunner that was directly in front of me. He was only 45 feet in front of me in the vegetation. And I could hear him yelling out. He was hit. He was fragged. And calling out in pain, calling out to Allah. And I remember thinking to myself, stand by. Here it comes. And I knew the next fire mission would be good. And sure enough, they ended up calling in, I think, five while we were there. And in the midst of that, my team leader in between missions ran forward and got me, pulled me back, got a tourniquet on my arm, my life. I owe my life to him. And neutralized the enemy. And then it got, you know, obviously the medevac helicopter came in and they flew. Those guys did an amazing job. They flew the rotors off and got us to Baghdad, where myself and my other two teammates that were hit, they got us into the operating room and saved our lives.
Well, now you're talking about operations. Let's fast forward since then. I made some notes. So instead of me trying to tell you exactly what happened to you, you can I'll run down a checklist so people get an idea. How many surgeries have you had?
I have had 40 surgeries.
40 surgeries, okay.
Probably a dozen, maybe 10 or so on my arm, and then the rest on my face.
How many blood transfusions have you had?
I believe 7.
How many stitches?
I wrote all these down. I haven't read them in years. I believe over 2,000 stitches, hundreds of staples, you know.
Got any pins?
What's that? Yeah, tons of pins. I still have pins in my body. I mean, it's funny when I have doctors. I recently went to a chiropractor,
right,
and they took x-rays of me, and they were dumbfounded, like literally stunned at both the metal and pins and just the destruction within my body.
How many skin grafts?
I believe at least 7.
Jesus. And did you have any bone grafts?
I did. They removed part of my skull. So they took, kind of amazing what they do. They removed part of my skull and they used the inner lining of my skull to rebuild my orbital floor. And then they pulled one of my ribs. They definitely pulled quite a few different places to rebuild. I am a huge patchwork quilt. This is a testament to modern medicine. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that war is usually when the greatest advances in medicine happen. You know, the military medical surgeons are just, and you have a lot of civilian doctors who volunteer to come over and serve on the front lines and some of the things they can do. And I am a big patchwork quilt. They remove bone from my lower leg to rebuild the bone in my face. They remove blood and tissue and blood vessels from both legs to rebuild parts of my face. They remove parts of bone from inside my arm to rebuild missing bone from the damage to my elbow. It truly is amazing what they do to put you back together.
That's an incredible story. I mean, that's being put through the crucible, man. That's being tested at every, you know, I mean, I just rattled those off and we were talking, but there's so much in between. It happens in between every one of those procedures, you know, the physical therapy and the healing and everything. It's like, it's obviously a nightmare. So
Well, and what I think a lot of people don't understand, Mike, and I talk about this a lot in my book, to try to, you know, it is never a straightforward path.
Right.
For warriors, it's almost always one step forward and oftentimes two or three steps right. back. War wounds are incredibly dirty. There's a lot of infection problems, and I was no different than any of the rest of those guys. The first two nasal reconstructions they attempted failed and created a lot of problems. It's like trying to rebuild a house, but the house is collapsing while you're trying to rebuild it.
Right.
So you're trying to stabilize the foundation at the same time you're trying to rebuild this house and redo the wiring and electrical. It's a little bit of a nightmare for the surgeons trying to deal with problems like this on the go. And obviously, it's incredibly hard on the patient.
Well, the good news is you had all that those procedures and you still look better than I do. So.
Oh. I had some great. I literally probably have one of the best plastic surgeons in the world put me back together. So I am very fortunate there.
All right, so we laid the groundwork of what you went through, and now we'll spend the next portion talking about what it taught you, how it changed your life, and how it puts you on the path that you're on now. And I listen to you. I watch you on. I've been on your Facebook for a long time. And I don't know how you do it. I'm usually pissed off all fucking day long about everything. And then I watch you and you're like, you got to get out there. You got to improve your attitude. I'm like, how does this guy do it? I don't understand this guy. He's some kind of Superman. I don't get it. So,
yeah, you know, I have my moments. I'm human just like everybody else. But I will say, I think coming close to death gives you a great appreciation for life. It right. also makes you realize a lot of the things that most of us worry about or fret about or stress about isn't that important in the grand scheme of things. So I'm just thankful to still be alive, and oftentimes I just tell myself, why am I going to waste energy stressing about something that I can't control? I talk to people a lot about control what you can. You're always going to have dicks you meet. You're always going to have people who want to take away your, I call them fun killers. They want to take away your positive energy. They just want to knock you down. And they're always going to be out there. You know, the difference is, do you let them or do you just ignore it and drive forward? That's the
right.
point in my life where I focus on positivity over negativity.
Well, how does that apply today? You see, we've all been locked up for a while, so to speak, on a house arrest, and there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of stress and anxiety. And I talked to a lot of my friends are freaked out, and you know, I've been through some adversity too. So I don't know, maybe you're the same way. I'm a little bit more relaxed than most of the people I know, just thinking that it could always be much worse and trying to tell them, chill out, things will work out, just Don't worry too much. Most of the things you worry about don't come to fruition anyhow. So what advice do you have right. for people out there that are stressed out? And a lot of people just, they won't tell you. A lot of guys I know, they won't tell you they're going through hell, like mentally. They put on a happy face for their families and their wife and their kids and stuff. But, you know, if you talk to them privately, they're freaked out, but they won't let anybody know it, which I think is kind of dangerous as well. But,
I agree with you. Men tend to suffer in silence, especially men who have achieved levels of success.
Right.
They feel like they got to put on this brave face and this tough face. And, you know, it's a good thing to do in the moment. As a leader, oftentimes we have to do that. But it's also, you know, you got to be careful. That'll bubble up and it'll boil over if you're not careful. So, you know, you got to have that pressure relief valve. You got to have those trusted friends that you can voice your innermost feelings. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, right now, it's crazy times. You know, there's a lot of stress on all of us. I feel it, you know, and I speak on positivity. I feel the stress. I mean, already we had everything that was going on with COVID and all of us being locked down. I mean, here I was speaking all across the country, and all that came to a grinding halt in March. And all my revenue suddenly dried up. And thank God for my military retirement had come. And making smart financial decisions with, you know, my wife. But it still creates a lot of stress, stress on your kids, stress on your friends, stress on your business. So how do you deal with that? So the biggest thing that I talk to people about is there are two things that people really need in life. We function really well when we have two things. One of those things is structure, and the other one is progress. And right, and those are the two things that kind of got thrown out the window when all of this happened. Basically,
yeah, exactly.
Structure went away, and everybody had to start working from home, and your progress went away because it's really hard to work from home and move the needle in your life. And so you got to do that for yourself. And you may not be able to do it on the same level. I think that's what there are very few people out there, and I think it's unhealthy and unrealistic to be able to think that you're going to be able to operate at the same level as you were before this whole thing happened. And so we have to set realistic goals when we create that structure. So I teach people, you know, what you got to focus on is what can you control and how do you keep moving the needle in your life? How do you make sure you're making that forward progress right now? And then you continue that. You know, the world will go back to a new normal. I will say that I don't know if it'll ever go back to the same normal it was before COVID. And, you know, we got other big problems right now with the George Floyd and, you know, the crisis we're having with both race and the vilification of law enforcement that's occurring. I think our country is a little bit at a tipping point. We've got to find some resolution there. But the bottom line is we got to focus on how we drive forward. So I tell people, focus on three things every day that you can do to move the needle. And I call it the rule of three P's. So do one thing physical. The human body needs to move. You know, your body is designed to move. And as we get older, we stop moving as much. But it's really doing you, you're building up, the more stress and anxiety and problems that are around you, the more your body needs to move. Even if it's getting outside, it's taking a walk, it's doing something. You know, I am a big fan of fitness being a part of what you do. But no matter what, you need to do something physical. Number two, you need to do something personal. Take care of something within your personal circle, whether it's, you know, dinner with your kids, or maybe it's reaching out to friends and family through Zoom calls. It doesn't matter. Maintain those connections. Or maybe it's just cleaning out your closet, cleaning out the garage, doing your taxes. I don't know what it is. But every day, do one thing personal. And then the last thing, something professional. And this is a challenge right now because there's a lot of people that are like, oh, well, you know, I'm not doing what I normally do professionally. My business was shut down or I was laid off. Well, guess what, man? There is a world after this. And this may be an opportunity to make that change. Maybe you wanted to open your own business. Maybe you wanted to go in a different direction. Maybe you want to go back to school. For me, I'm not speaking. So I've really wanted to develop new coaching and consulting programs. So I'm using the time to work on those things. And I'm really fortunate. I've met some amazing people, and I'm learning from them. But I'm building those programs for the future. So that's what I talk to people about. Rule of three P's. If you do that, you'll create structure, you'll create progress, and you'll feel better about yourself and relieve some of the stress and anxiety because now you've taken back control. You're able to control what you can instead of most people who are just kind of wandering through each day, watching the news, consuming all this negative energy and thinking to themselves, man, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can control.
Yeah, well, those are awesome points. That's one of the main themes I wanted to drive home. The other thing too is I read an interview with you from a long time ago. I did a lot of research on you, more than I usually do with other people. Usually I just winging this. But I said, I don't want this guy going back to other operators and saying this guy was a fucking dummy. So you talked about, and I think it's a theme that's relevant now with what's going on with a lot of people that are having problems. You talked about in an interview how many times you second-guessed your maneuvers the night that you were shot up and in a firefight. If you could have done this and you could have done that, and then the stress that it created in your life, second-guessing yourself and second-guessing your mistakes and things like that. And I thought that was very – and your take back then was, I'm sure it's the same now, is don't beat yourself up thinking about what could have been, what would have been. Move forward.
That's right. And because, you know, the thing is, we can't control the past. We can't go back and change the past. It's gone. And even if you messed up, I made some mistakes in my life. I made some leadership mistakes. I mean, that's really my first book, The Trident, is that whole journey of making some leadership mistakes and then, you know, getting an opportunity to fix myself and grow up and learn from it. And that's what I tell people. It's never too late to come back. So learn from our mistakes, you know, but drive forward, you know. Can't go back and change the past. All you can do is shape the future. You should always be looking at driving forward. I actually sat through a webinar earlier, you know, pretty amazing with Jesse Itzler. I don't know if anybody knows who Jesse Itzler. I mean, he's a super high-level business guy. He's been there. He's done that. I mean, you know, millionaire, billionaire, married a billionaire. But he talked about that he is always looking forward. Always looking forward. He's planning his life and how he's moving forward. And I think that's critical. So many people, especially when things are going wrong, have a natural tendency to focus on the pain and the misery and the discomfort that they're in. And they end up dwelling on that and they end up getting stuck. There's a saying in special operations and in the military that, you know, when we are under attack, you're on the X. And there's so many people that get stuck on the X. They get overwhelmed. They just get the anxiety and the stress of the situation pins them down to the point that they can't get up and move forward. And I've watched a lot of people in life, and Mike, I know you probably know plenty also, who have had something bad happen to them, and they literally withered on the X. And now they're kind of, that has defined them. They've never been able to drive again because of. And what I tell people is you have to get off the X. I mean, it's the thing that my teammates did that night that enabled me to come home and be alive. That gunship helped us get off the X. It is what I've done in my leadership failure. It's what I've done in my business. And it's what I did with my injuries. I always focused on driving forward. So never always look to move forward. Always look to get off the X. Always set that next goalpost. And then move to it, and then set the next one, and move to that one. That is how you create forward progress, and that's how you're going to feel good about yourself by the time you get to the end of this life.
Your mental toughness, did that come from Buds, or were you psychologically prepared as best as you could? Were you mentally tough before you went to Buds, or was that a defining moment for you, defining Crucible?
You know, I didn't come from like this hard, I didn't grow up in like this hard background, you know. I had a good family. I mean, my parents were divorced. I bounced around. I mean, I'll admit, I was like the quintessential 90-pound weakling. I got bullied in school.
Yeah.
And did that build some of an overcome mindset? Probably, because I wanted to prove some of these bullies and people wrong who said, you know, you'll never be a Navy SEAL. I used to hear that. So I think maybe that formed some of it. And then I think it just continued to form. I will say, I think some people have a natural ability to endure more stress and discomfort than others. And I think the guys who make it through SEAL training have a little bit of that genetic trait. But anybody can build an overcome mindset. And that's what I tell people. I'll tell you what won't build an overcome mindset. It's constantly choosing comfort. It's constantly choosing the easy way. If you always do that, when you're finally confronted with a hard situation, you are not going to know what to do because you've never been in a hard or uncomfortable situation. So that's why I encourage people, do some things that are hard in your life. Push yourself to do hard things, because then when these really hard life ambush moments come, you're going to be able to look back and say, you know what, I've been through other hard situations before. I can make it through this. That is the essence of the overcome mindset. It's just your ability to push through pain and discomfort and drive forward.
Yeah, I mean, you make great points. You don't have to go through Navy SEAL training. You don't have to have adversity at 20 years old, 30 years old, or 15 years old. You can start building or getting mentally tough when you're 50, 60, whatever it takes. It's like, to me, it's baby steps. You make it through one day and you build on that day, and then you It's almost like weight training. You know, you build a slowly, you become stronger and stronger and stronger. And then I think that's an important message for right now. What's going on? It's when you look at what's going on in the world, Jason, and your background serving the country, how crazy it is right now. What are some of the thoughts on the images that have been pouring through the TV screens and computer screens in the last 3 or 4 days? I'm just curious.
I'm troubled by it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we are so divided as a nation, and both sides of the political spectrum want to point at the other side, saying you're the reason. I'm not sure what the answer is. That I don't know. Although I am troubled by oftentimes how both sides want to go to absolutes.
Yeah.
Vilification of law enforcement. I have a lot of friends in law enforcement that are amazing, amazingly good people that want to give back to the community and do all kinds of incredible things. I think one of the greatest downfalls that's occurring to our country is the media. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in the media, have friends in the media, that probably take offense to that. But we're so focused on let's put out the most sensational story there is. And oftentimes the most sensational story is the one that comes with bad news and negative information, like what happened with George Floyd. And make no mistake, I watched what that officer did, and I have dealt with individuals that are in custody. I mean, it's one of the things we did. We wrapped up terrorists when we were overseas. But once they are subdued, they are no longer a threat. And it is our job now to protect them until we turn them, you know, over there we did it where we turned them over to the Iraqis.
Right.
And they went into the Iraqi justice system. But, you know, we follow the Code of Military Justice and we follow the Geneva Convention. If you get to the point where you are, A, injuring them after that fact, or B, things like that, in my opinion, you're no better than anybody. You're no better than they are. These guys are terrorists. And that was troubling to me to watch, because when I saw what that guy did for 9 minutes with his knee on the back of his neck, that was nothing but power. That's all that was. I am in a position of power over you, and I'm just going to hold it on you. So, but here's the thing. He is one man who somewhere lost his moral compass. And the fact now that there's so many people out there, the outcome of this, it makes no sense to me. I mean, what people are doing now is a level of terrorism. You are going out and you are destroying buildings and burning property and terrorizing people. And the mere fact that there are individuals out there that are like, well, maybe this is what needs to happen. No, it's not. You know, there's a lot of peaceful protests that have occurred. I guarantee Martin Luther King would have never said this is what needs to happen.
Yeah, let's go burn down the city.
Yeah, he created a national movement, and rightfully so. So, I don't know. There needs to be someone who can bring people back together to a little bit of sanity. And granted, there are some problems in the world, but it's hard for me to watch, because having been overseas in war zones, I mean, it reminds me of a war zone. We were my wife and I were in Virginia Beach on Sunday night, where we watched protesters go by. They were peaceful. It was starting to get a little aggressive when we were there. We left. I recognized the situation when
right.
It was going south. And we left. I got out of the city. It was at that point that I think things were really going bad. And I talked to friends of mine that were police officers, and it was at that point they started breaking in windows. They started, one of the police officers got hit in the head with a brick. He got a brick thrown at him. You know, why? You know, what does that accomplish? And that's what I don't understand. So it's tough for me to watch. It's going to be leadership and communication that's going to bring it back together. You know, and I hope that people with sound heads who really within on both sides, within the law enforcement community and within the African American community, that can come together and I don't know, create some reality. I mean, this is not good for our country, and obviously destroying cities does not have a good outcome.
No, it's something I never thought I'd see. It's surreal to watch, and Unfortunately, I think it's here to stay for a while. I don't think this is going to be something that goes away fast. It seems like the folks who are behind us have some momentum, and that's equally frustrating. With everything we just went through as a country in lockdown, and then we come sort of stick our heads out, of the door, and then this stuff is going on. It's kind of a 1-2 punch to the gut. It's unfortunate, yeah, to say the least. So
yeah, I agree.
All right, so what are you up to today? Like, you got the book out, Overcome, and you were in the middle of a pretty good public relations campaign when all this stuff hit with COVID-19. So you still have the book out. Are you gonna get back on the trail for motivational speaking, and how can people contact you for coaching or motivational speaking and that kind of stuff? I want to put that out there so people have a way to contact you.
Yeah, Mike, thanks, man. Absolutely. I love speaking and trying to motivate and inspire people to help them be better, share some of the lessons that I've learned in both not only my military career, but my personal career, the ups and downs, and even a business career. And I talk about all that in my book, Overcome, and then the first book, The Trident, which was a New York Times bestseller. It really gets into the leadership journey within the military. So now I'm taking all that stuff and putting it into programs to try and help people. I'm building new coaching programs. In the military, we have guys that are called point men. I mean, it's the point man's job to get you where you need to go. They do an assessment of the terrain that you're going to go through. They do an assessment of all the dangers, and they try and find the best, safest, and most direct route to get you where you need to go. And that's exactly, I'm building coaching programs now to be your point man. As a matter of fact, the name of the coaching program is called I Got Point. This is brand new, so if you go looking for it, you probably won't find it yet. But I'm working with some individuals one-on-one, helping them to be the point man for their life, to help them lay out that path to success in all aspects of their lives. I teach something called Pentagon of Peak Performance, and it's physical leadership, mental leadership, emotional leadership, social leadership, and spiritual leadership, because those are the things that you need to be balanced in to truly be ready for any of the ambushes and problems that come in. So if you want to learn more about that, you want to learn more about me, go to jasonredman.com. From there, you can book me for speaking. From there, it takes you to my coaching site. From there, you can buy signed copies of my book. It's got all my socials. If you want to follow me on socials, I try and put out good quality, positive content. I just want to help people become the best version of themselves.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you take this as a compliment or not, but I know a lot of operators. I know a lot of guys. You're probably one of the toughest bastards I know for what you went through. And it's just, it's incredible. Your story is incredible. And the fact that you just would never quit. And, all the way from being on your back in Iraq and looking up at the stars to where you are today, the journey is absolutely incredible. It's actually stunning, and at least as far as I'm concerned. So, if folks are out there looking for a light at the end of the tunnel, I think they'll find one with Jason Redman's story. And I wanted to thank you for your service to our country as well, brother. And it's just a real pleasure to have you on. And tell your story, and hopefully we can do this again. If you got anything else happening in the future, you let me know, and we'll have you back on where we can spend some more time and shoot the shit.
Mike, I'd be honored, man. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, and God bless you, man, and God bless your family, and good luck to you in the coming weeks and beyond, sir.
Yeah, thank you, you too, and everybody, out there. I know it's crazy times, but have a little, spread a little positivity, have a little perspective, recognize, challenge your viewpoints. Sometimes we get wrapped around our own viewpoints and we think, well, our way is the only way, but that's not true. People see the world through different lenses, but at the end of the day, being all over the world, people are people no matter what. They just want a good life. They want to be able to raise their kids. They want peace. And, I think that's what's important. I think if everybody can get there, it'll make a difference. At least that's what I'd like to see. You know, I fought for my kids to have a peaceful life, and I hope they will.
Let me do my Lieutenant Columbo one last question. I'll sneak my Columbo question in. What have you learned in the weeks that we've been sitting at home and your life has been put on hold, your career path has been put on hold? What is that? What's the main lesson you've taken away from that with perspective?
I'll be honest, it's been a little challenging for me because I'm the type of person that always likes to be moving.
Yeah.
And I've had to sit still a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. But it's been good for me because it's given me time to think. There's been a lot of, introspection. It's been a lot of, am I on the right path? And the answer is yes. And now how do I take that and help others to be better? So that's kind of how I've looked at it. There's always going to be ebbs and flows in the life. There's always going to be highs and lows. And right now, you know, this is a slower time. In some ways, a little bit of a low, I guess you could say, but also life's about perspective. You know, if you look at the positive things, you know, it's more time with my family. It's probably the longest I've been home in my entire life. And thankfully, you know, I love my wife, I love my kids, and I've enjoyed being able to having that time to spend with them.
Well, that's perspective, man. It's giving you perspective. And we'll let you run. I know you got a lot of other stuff going on, and I appreciate you carving out the time for myself and my listeners. And we'll talk more about you in the next 10 or 15 minutes to make you out to be even more of a Superman than I consider you to be. So it's good stuff. Thanks, brother.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. You guys have a good one. Thank you.
Take care, man. I'm going to continue to keep my mouth shut and not screw up that interview with politics or anything else. The message, I think, is so much more important than politics, transcends politics, and just real quick, you can find Jason Redman, jasonredman.com, R-E-D-M-A-N. His book, Overcome, is on Amazon. That's how you can follow Jason and keep an eye on what he's doing. He's also on Facebook. He's done a pretty funny quarantine log. He and his wife and his family every day they're up to some hijinks. And I appreciate his message. I think it's timely, more timely than ever. And I think we need to hear from guys like this. Guys who tell you no matter how bad it is, don't quit. That's been a message of mine through my life. During good times and bad. So obviously good times, who wants to quit during good times? But it's the bad times that define you and how you handle those. I tell you, it's crazy. When you make it through the bad times, on the other side, the good times are better than they used to be. So it's the strangest thing. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I think it's true. And it's about perspective. I'm sure that has something to do with their perspective. Of where you came from, what you made through, who you are as a person. Are you stronger? You're tougher? Definitely. So we appreciate your support on I can work that into a great plug. You know what I mean? I'm learning this. Still learn this business. Speaking of staying strong, you can help us stay strong. It's like a bad radio plug or watching an NFL game where they work in potato chip ads and everything else. At least in Philly they do. Merrill Reese on the radio, it's like the Eagles games. It's too stupid the way they take things from the game and they they spin them right into an advertisement or a plug. But we appreciate the support on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. And if you like what we're doing, you can follow us and help us out on there. And keep us strong. Keep us going. And don't quit in life. That's the message. Tough times. If you're new to adversity, peaks and valleys, the valleys don't last. You just have to weather them. Do the best you can. Find somebody to talk to, whether it's a family member, it could be a priest, it could be someone, you know, in your church, could be a professional, someone who can help you. You can find folks online now, too. They're doing, like, conferences. Talk to somebody. Try to work through things. And don't quit. No matter how bad it is, never quit.